Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
We're so excited to bring Dr. Emily back on the podcast because she really is a guru in everything foot health. And you might be listening and thinking, hey, I've got foot issues. I have pain or plantar fasciitis, or I've got bunions. And sometimes I don't even really feel the ground underneath my feet, or I can't sense what the ground is doing underneath my foot. Neboso Technology has you covered. We'll be talking about some of their products and how the NeuroBall or the textured toe socks can really help wake up those feet so you can better feel the ground underneath you. Another one of Jen and my personal favorites is their textured toe splay. It helps open up those feet so those toes can move more properly how they're meant to. We have a special discount code. If you go to the link down in the show notes and use code OPTIMAL, you can get 15% off your entire Neboso order. And when I tell you their products are specifically designed to help your foot work more naturally, feel the ground better underneath you, and help your feet and toes move better and get stronger. And when you improve your foot health, you improve your overall movement and whole body health. So go to that link down in the show notes and make sure you use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get 15% off. We are so excited to have this guest back on the podcast, our favorite functional podiatrist, Dr. Emily Splickle, aka the Movement Longevity Doctor, who is a functional podiatrist, human movement specialist, author of Barefoot Strong, and CEO and founder of Neboso Technology. With over 23 years in the health and fitness industry, Dr. Splickle has positioned herself as a global leader on the topics of postural alignment and human movement as it refers to barefoot science, foot-to-core integration, and sensory integration. Again, we're so excited to have her back on because in episode 183, we talk a lot about the biomechanical aspects, anatomical things when it relates to foot health and different diagnoses like plantar fasciitis and bunions. Today, we're taking a little bit of a different approach, some things you may not initially think of when you think of foot health, but they are massive topics that can impact your foot health and overall movement health and longevity. Let's get into it. Dr. Emily, thanks so much for coming back on, another repeat guest, which we don't have often. So, but our favorite functional podiatrist out there, we love talking foot stuff ourselves, and so glad we can have you back on.
Thank you so much. And I am honored to be one of the repeat guests. So thank you.
I mean, truly, your information and the way that you educate is really so beneficial because I think, you know, you're able to educate on things that not everyone is hearing about or understanding, and in a way that people can actually take it in and start to identify what they need within their body and in their foot health. So that is something that I want to dive into specifically, because I know we've already done a podcast with you, which people can go back and listen to. Episode 183, we talked a little bit more about like the mechanical aspects of the foot and a lot of the common diagnoses or issues that people are having. But what I want to dive into, or what we want to dive into a little bit more, is specifically first, just covering like the four pillars of your healthy feet. Like, what are those four pillars that really make up? Because I think this is just it alone going to be something that people hear and kind of wake up to that they don't really think about. Taking a quick pause from your foot health to remind you that if you are having trouble hydrating your body, because this is full body health, if we are not getting proper and adequate hydration, especially if you're trying to be mindful of not getting a lot of processed foods, we need to replenish our body with electrolytes, especially as we start to go from spring into summer and the warmer weather is happening and we're going to be working out and sweating. We need to replenish our body. I'm telling you, you're going to feel so much better, not only physically, but mentally, your energy every day. This is something I do not go without. When we travel, we stuff packets of Element, whether it's in Dante's diaper bag or we're putting it in our suitcase, a whole box of it, so we can help replenish everyone else around us as well. Element goes with us wherever we go. And I'm telling you, just at least start with half a pack in like 16 ounces of water. If you're not used to that much, you know, flavor and electrolytes and salt, it is quite salty if you're not used to it, but this is going to be a game changer. Even my mother-in-law told me what a big impact it made when she noticed that she didn't have it in her life and how her energy would drop throughout the day. So rather than reaching for that extra cup of coffee that you know your body doesn't want because it's going to just make you feel a little weird, get in some hydration with some Element in your water. It's going to help you to drink more water, to feel better throughout the day. So if you haven't yet, please go to the link in our show notes. The link is drinkelement, that's LMNT.com/optimal. With every purchase, you get a free sample pack so you get to explore their incredible flavors, which I absolutely love. Zero sugar added. I highly recommend. So go check out that link and we'll get back into the podcast.
Absolutely. So these are going to be my four pillars for not just healthy feet, but the reason that I look at healthy feet is for movement longevity. So all of the listeners want to move well. We want to move well for a really long time. So your feet being really your base of support is you have to be doing something for them or about them proactively and preventively to support, again, this movement longevity. So the four pillars are going to be first, awareness. So do you even feel your feet? This is thinking about surfaces you stand on, being barefoot, wearing certain shoes that support a very sensorily rich environment. The second one is going to be strength. So you have to have strong feet, but the foot strength that I look at is integrated strength. So to me, strong feet must be connected to a strong core, and that is through fascial lines that they connect to each other. You could also think of it as our base being our foot has to connect to our center of gravity or our center of mass. So to move well, you have to have control of your center of gravity or your center of mass. So those talk to each other. So that's your second pillar. Third one is going to be balance. So we need to have sufficient single leg stability to move well. And when I say move well, I mean walk well. And the most foundational functional movement that we do every day is walk. And I'm kind of obsessed with bipedalism and gait, and that our nervous system is really shaped around being able to walk. So is longevity. So that would be balance, single leg stability. And then fourth would be recovery. And when I think about recovery, it's not just, oh, do I massage my feet? Am I doing the NeuroBall release, right? It's more, what am I doing to support the circulation of the feet, which is an important part of recovery in the whole body. But foot circulation is unique because it's really micro circulation. It's itty bitty because the foot is so far away from the heart. So everything just gets really small down there. So those are my four pillars. And I want people to address every aspect every single day.
And that's amazing because I mean, if I were to think about four pillars of foot health, I think a lot of the aspects of what you talked about would be in my four pillars or would be there. But just the way you frame them is so unique. And I think, again, it's done in a way that is function forward, preventative, and proactive. And I don't think many people look at foot health in that way. And even some of the things that you said or the things that you talked about being sensory rich environments, microcirculation, these are not terms you tend to hear talked about when we're talking foot health, when we're talking plantar fasciitis, or when we're talking, you know, bunions or some of the mechanical things. But those things, being a sensory-rich environment, being, you know, working on our microcirculation and the recovery of that foot day-to-day can really help with the mechanical aspects and can really help anatomically as well, at least in my mind. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But why don't we jump in and talk about why it's so important for our feet to be in a sensory-rich environment and be able to feel, to develop that awareness you were talking about.
Yeah. So the, and if I can just kind of reemphasize and like underline what you had said, is that a lot of people do think about feet very biomechanically, which is what our first podcast was around, thinking bunions, flat feet, plantar fasciitis, high arches, low arches, range of motion. Those are very mechanical, which is important. That's actually what my entire podiatry training was around. And then it was this other aspect that I'm very much into, which is the sensory side of the feet that was not emphasized in school, but it's very important for human movement, is that our foot is controlled by thousands of nerves. These nerves are found in the skin in the bottom of the foot, but the nerves are also found wrapped around all of the fascial spider web that is everywhere in the bottom of the foot. Actually, it's everywhere in the body, of every muscle group, and then muscle fiber, and then every fibril, and it just gets deeper and deeper interwoven. Those nerves help to build an awareness to just that you can even feel your foot in the first place, right? Do you feel all 10 toes? Do you feel the tripod? And then when you walk, do you feel the ground? Do you feel the vibration of impact forces so that you can read and auto-adjust to every step that you're taking? And that ties into balance, which is one of the pillars. That ties into strength, which was another pillar. So each kind of builds off of each other to this overarching need to be able to walk well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. How do we start to, like, what does addressing your sensation and starting to bring awareness to that really start to, like, what on a day-to-day does that start to look like?
Yeah, and to add to that, I think that people don't realize the importance of sensation until we start seeing some of those end of the road or downstream diagnoses that come up that are very common, like neuropathy, like different peripheral vascular diseases and disorders that that tend to be more degenerative, but start building up when we're in our 30s, when we're in our 40s, you know, based on how we treat our feet long term. So framing it with that in mind, and some of those terms or diagnoses may have triggered for some listeners, like, oh, neuropathy, yes.
Or that now, runs in my family.
Yeah, that runs in my family. I have a grandparent or a parent that is dealing with that.
Yeah, so that would be the latter stage of it. So totally. Yes, if you can't feel your feet from neuropathy, and the neuropathy doesn't have to be diabetic. It could be chemo-induced, could be small nerve, could be idiopathic. There's a lot of autoimmune-related neuropathy. There's some that relate to different vaccines. I just won't even go there, but they're over there, and they kind of tie into it as well, just because of inflammation. Mm-hmm. So inflammation can be quite toxic to the peripheral nerves, which is where a lot of these neuropathies actually present. But way over here on this side, which is what I'm going to address, is that you don't have to have lack of sensation in your feet to need to do what I'm talking about, which is thinking about foot awareness, movement awareness, posture awareness. What am I doing every day to support the nerves and the microcirculation and the muscles in the feet? So that can start with what you do in the morning when you brush your teeth, which is my favorite time to do foot stuff, is you could stand barefoot. You could be on a hardwood surface. Harder surfaces are more stimulating to the nerves in the feet than softer surfaces. So instead of the carpet, you're on a hardwood floor. Obviously, Neboso ties into this. This is why I started Neboso, was I wanted to have products and surfaces and ways to help everyone wake up their feet and connect to the sensory side of the feet and the microcirculation and everything that we're talking about. So do you want to do that? Do you want to release your feet on a neural ball? Great. Check the box with the texture. Do you want to just release your feet with a golf ball or a tennis ball? Just the act of releasing your feet is stimulating circulation and waking up the nerves. Do you get a little bit more release with the Neboso? Sure. But I'm trying to keep like an unbiased approach to what people could do. So I'm giving options here. I believe that people should get at least 30 minutes of barefoot stimulation every day. That could be walking around your home. That could be doing a barefoot workout like Pilates, yoga, something like that. I'm a huge fan of earthing and grounding, which is going outside on the grass, on the dirt, and you are essentially connecting to the planet barefoot. For those that are not familiar with earthing and grounding, is that the earth has a negative charge to it. We have a positive charge, or acidity, inflammation, aging has a positive charge, and you're essentially canceling out the acidity in the body through the basic or the negative of the earth. So I'm a big fan of it. There's also really good research around earthing and circulation. 15 minutes a day outside earthing, you get really good vasodilation or opening of blood vessels in the foot. whole body vibration platforms. I'm obsessed with these as well. I have one in my office, and 10 to 15 minutes of standing on a vibration platform increases microcirculation to the feet and to the muscles and to the fascia. So really supportive to what we essentially were talking about as well. So there's different modalities or different ways to do it. You know, I like to incorporate as many as I can at the same time, because that's just great. Makes it a little bit more efficient, but you can easily do these things in 15 to 20 minutes a day while doing something else. Read your text messages and go outside and earth if you want to.
And I think that's where it helps make it a little more accessible for people, is like, do a few things while you brush your teeth, make your morning coffee, and go enjoy it standing in the grass or sitting where you can have your feet in some dirt or grass, rather than, you know, on the couch, you know, where you're not getting that sensory stimulation.
Well, and I was going to ask too, you know, so often what I hear is, well, what shoes are best for home? And what can I wear around my home? And so it's like people are going from outside wearing shoes to inside their home still wearing shoes. Mm-hmm. And even if we're wearing barefoot more slippers or anything, or socks on our feet, like, are we impeding that connection of truly being barefoot and getting that stimulation?
And I've heard some people say that I don't feel comfortable walking barefoot, or I have pain when I walk barefoot around my house. So what do I do in that situation? Walking 30 minutes barefoot? That sounds like, that sounds awful, you know?
Yeah. And I know many people, actually literally just saw a patient who wears sneakers every waking moment. So it's, that's the reality of certain individuals.
Yeah.
Now, what that does, it is creating a sensory disconnect to the earth, to the ground, to the surface, and the nerves in your feet. So if that is the case, can we create a safe way to get at least 30 minutes of barefoot stimulation every day? If it's the act of walking in your home on marble floors, I understand that, but could you stand when you're doing dishes? I don't know, try to weave it in, right? So it's just taking a little dose. Could it be 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening? So you're segmenting it so that the total dosage still hits that 30 minutes, but you're not thinking, wow, I don't know if I can make 30 minutes. House shoes are on the rise. You can thank certain footwear companies for bringing in awareness to house shoes and things like that. I do try to get people to still think about, okay, if I'm in a smooth recovery sandal, could I have the Neboso sock on to stimulate my feet? Could I have them, but still make sure I put my feet on the vibration platform? Could I still do, right? So it's about like, this is good. This is your reality. Can we sneak in and weave in just a little bit more sensorial stimulation into your day, knowing that you might have to be in those because of the floors or a history of foot pain and things like that.
Yeah. And I think that's just the reality that as providers, we know we need to approach. Like, we can very easily say, oh, yep, 30 minutes a day. But we know that's not the case for everybody, or they're not going to be able to jump right into that. So I appreciate how you're saying many different ways we can get that 30 minutes, many different ways we can just add that influence in a little bit more, even if it's not walking 30 minutes straight on hard ground, which might be difficult for some people. And I know one of the pillars that you mentioned was balance. And I think that this development of awareness, this increase in our connection with the nerves, also the improvement of the microcirculation, can play a lot into balance. And I know a lot of people throw around this term proprioception, which you kind of alluded to when you talked about nerves, you know, our body's ability to understand there's a foot there and that I have 10 toes and that I'm wiggling certain toes. So to what degree is this work on the sensory environment and microcirculation going to help improve proprioception and therefore balance?
Yeah. So on the balance, so just so the listeners have a gauge of, do I have good balance or not good balance? You really want to think about 10 seconds. So can you stand on one leg for 10 seconds? That is where research has shown if you can, good, you've essentially checked the box that you are mitigating falls. And this is for everyone. This could be mitigating an ankle sprain if you're 25 years old and you're thinking of your role in this, mm-hmm. right? So when I assess a patient and when I teach other practitioners to assess the feet, I build in a single leg or a balance test on every single patient as we flow through the foot assessment, which is really easy to do. When I train someone's balance through different single leg exercises that I have out there, I actually created a barefoot workout, a barefoot balance training workout that I did in New York City for years before I moved to Arizona. And then obviously at Nobosu, we have like the Kinesis board and different products for balance. Everything is built around 10 second balances. So can you stand on your right leg 10 seconds and go left, right, left, right, left? And you just keep switching. And then I will incorporate different perturbations. A perturbation is I'm trying to throw you off, right? That could be moving your eyes. It could be shaking your head no or nodding yes. And there are things that are trying to look at how we balance through a sensory stacked strategy, which is your eyes, your vestibular, proprioceptive would be joints. So you had mentioned that, Dr. Dom, the proprioception in the joint, and then mechanoception or touch, which is the hands and the feet, the palms of them. So thinking about balance is you have to feel your feet to balance well, but you have to feel your center of mass to balance well. You actually have to feel your whole body, which is called a body schema or a mind's. How connected are you to your mental picture of your body in space? And that's a really important part of movement as well. Why I focus on single leg stability is that it is a segment of how we walk. So in order to walk well, there's a point during the gait cycle where you're standing on one leg. It's called mid-stance. But also to take long steps, you have to have single leg stability. To go upstairs, you have to have single leg stability. So there's a lot of functional movements around that. And all of that is really based around your perception of your body as well, which I call movement accuracy. So can we move accurately through the perception of our body and our foot in space? And then how does that translate to each segment of movement?
For some people, you know, you've been diagnosed or told you have flattening of your arches as you're walking, you have overpronation. So you need an insert every time you walk. How impactful is this mechanical aspect of pronating in the foot and being, should we be afraid of this? Is this something to fear? Is this something we can work on? Do we have to wear inserts for the rest of our life or orthotics? So can you kind of give some insight on this single leg stance, and does it improve if we are doing stuff like stimulation and balance?
Yeah. So the foot type is actually really, really important to single leg stability. And what you were asking of is the overpronation, which mm-hmm. is where the foot collapses in and then the leg kind of rolls inward and follows it. Every foot type or imbalance of a foot type has a spectrum. So you could be like a little bit pronated or you could be like really, really pronated. So the answer is wherever you are on that spectrum, as far as your orthotics. So a mild collapse of the foot, pronation, I want the listeners to think unlocked. So you just unlocked the foot, right? When your knee is straight, your leg is straight and you're standing, it's locked. You're not like locking your knee, but it's locked, it's stacked, right? So if I were to have the listeners slightly bend their knee, they've essentially unlocked the knee. So that term locked and unlocked, it's a big, I'm sure you guys use it all the time, it's a big podiatry term and it's a foot term that I like people to understand. So the more that we collapse in or pronate, the more unlocked your foot is. And if it's very unlocked, it becomes very unstable. And then obviously you're shifting the skeleton, which means your Jenga blocks stacked higher up become malaligned because of your base. So a overpronated foot mechanically is like the Jenga blocks, mm-hmm. but it also, an unlocked foot is a slower foot. Mm-hmm. So it has a harder time feeling the ground and reacting to the ground and contracting to the ground and communicating with the core. Insufficient time to absorb impact forces, to transfer energy. So they may actually need an orthotic that you had referenced, and the orthotic may be an important part of their story because of where they sit on that scale or spectrum, if you want to say, of overpronation. the further you go into the overpronation side, the harder it is to control without an orthotic. And those are a lot of the patients I see, because they, you can't try to fix those on the internet.
Yeah.
You might need some eyeballs on it. On the other side, where it's mild, that's where a lot of the work that you guys demonstrate through exercises and things like that to strengthen, that you don't have to be in orthotics and arch supports on the earlier side of the scale. So it's really important for the listeners to understand where they may sit on that, so that they approach it appropriately and are not feeling misled or frustrated because they're trying to do something and really their foot type didn't mirror where they thought that they were.
And I appreciate that you bring up, there is a time and place for orthotics. And I know the way that Jen and I educate in feet, people will often think like, oh, we're demonizing the use of any external device. In our optimal state, like people should be able to, and hopefully can get on a path to train their feet to where one day they won't need to rely on that. Where someone is at, we definitely need to meet them there. And so there always is a place for that orthotic. And you brought up briefly previously one of the sensory devices that I know that you've created through Noboso, being the stimulation toe socks. And you have a whole host of these other products, being the insert, sensory mat. Remind me, because you created a orthotic, does that also have sensory component on it? So these products, itself are a great option for the individual who may not feel comfortable outside of the shoe to get 10 minutes, to get 15 minutes of that sensory stimulation to get a little bit better feedback, regardless of what type of footwear they feel like or they feel most supported in.
Yeah, and I think that's why you get a lot of people seeking what you guys are delivering with foot health and ownership of your feet and strengthening your feet, is because there is, at the same time, from the medical side, an over prescription of orthotics. Yeah. So you have kind of these two sides that then the patient or the people in the middle become confused, right? They know that they're often over prescribed, so they don't know the appropriateness of them.
Right.
Now, what is important to emphasize is that if someone truly does need a custom orthotic because they have ligament laxity and they have a little bit more aggressive overpronation, they're over here on the more severe side, they still need to do the exercises that you guys are demonstrating, right? So just because you use a custom orthotic does not mean that exercising your feet is irrelevant. The orthotic does not take the place of still strengthening the feet, still feeling the feet. And there is research that shows chronic use of custom orthotics and arch supports and cushion shoes causes atrophy of the intrinsic muscles of the feet and denervation of the foot. There is research that is demonstrating that. So that is actually one of the reasons why at Noboso we did develop our arch support with the texture on it, which is called the Noboso form, because of that research saying, if you need an arch support, at least let's keep the texture and like, hello, little guys, like stay awake and strong, because I know you need that arch support. So let's elevate the experience to the people that do need arch support so they can still stay strong and aware of their feet despite that.
I personally feel like that it should be required to disclose that to people upon the prescription of, you know, cushioned shoes, arch supports. It's like, hey, there is this research that shows this, which is why it's also important to have this, you know, the strengthening and these other aspects as a part of your foot health journey. I personally just think that we underwhelmingly follow the Hippocratic Oath, the do no harm, and make sure we tell people all risks, benefits, and, you know, consequences of prescriptions that we give them, that being a perfect one. When we give someone an insert, we should say, hey, there's research that says if we do nothing else, these might be some of the consequences.
And someone who is in an orthotic and wants to make the journey, say they're not, you know, they're still pretty early on, could they make the journey of getting off of an orthotic and working into a stronger, more balanced foot and wearing more minimal type shoes?
And how long will it take? Tell us exactly.
No.
It is going to hold me to the timeline. Yes. Okay. So is it possible for someone who had our supports and orthotics, and let's say they're on this earlier side of the scale, right? So they're mild to moderate. Let's scope it to that.
Yeah.
Yes, you can 100% get out of an orthotic. Now, that is a little bit based off of injury history as well, and the activity at which you are going to be placing the foot under. And then third, to me, is also the patience and the commitment of the patient or the individual, right? So if someone has had recurring for 5 years on and off plantar fasciitis, which means now we know it's an osis, there's got to be some degeneration in there. So the collagen fibers are changing. Maybe they even have a little more micro tearing that's partial tear. I don't know. They have some complex history with their plantar fascia. Mm-hmm. That may be one of the exceptions that it is difficult to get them out because they have progressed injury history. We just got to understand that, right? If someone does not have that injury history and they're just like, I don't know, I've just been in them since I was a kid because that's what I was told. I've never had foot pain. And now I'm just starting to, you know, I follow Dr. Jen Vitt and I'm like, I want to know these things, right? I want to understand my feet. Let's say that's them, because that's going to be the majority of the listeners.
Yeah.
Is yes, you can 100% get out of them. You do it slowly, Dr. Dom, slowly. And you do it based off of the demand at which they're placing their foot under. So let's say they get into a healthy foot release routine. They get into the barefoot stimulation every day. So they're starting to do some of the pillars, but they still stay in the orthotics. So we got to kind of do these at the same time, right? I'm starting to strengthen my feet. Oh, I'm going to do all my kettlebells barefoot. But when I work on my feet as a bank teller, it's the only thing I can think of is standing on the feet, or a nurse, or I actually work with a lot of police and MTA workers and TSA, and right? So let's say your job requires you on your feet. This is a little different because your demands are here, right? But you could do your workouts barefoot. You could make sure that you start doing some foot to core strengthening. You do your balancing. You're wearing the Noboso socks at home for recovery. I don't really care what you're doing, right? But we're kind of doing these things. But the one exception to your orthotic experience is when you are on your feet 8 hours a day as a nurse, or nurses work more like 12 hours. So long time, right? That's where we have to take a nugget and then filter in the reality of the individual, right? And those are a lot of the conversations that I have with my patients. Is I say, we're going to keep the orthotics for just when you run or just when you're at work. Mm-hmm. And now I want you to start to break the rules a little bit. On the weekend, you're hanging out with friends. Like, you don't have to be in prison with these orthotics, right? Let's kind of defy and break the barriers and then just understand our foot type, understand the demands of various stress on the feet, and be intelligent about which ones do I need to use the orthotics for. And that's the ownership that I want people to have with their feet and their foot health, is to be able to make those decisions very well informed and educated so that they can prevent foot pain.
I think I like that answer because in a way it reminds me of how I talk to people about training when it comes to sport. You know, that's where my mind goes because I was an athlete, and we train in the gym in a controlled environment. Like you said, you can do maybe some of your exercises barefoot when your focus is on movement, when you're not in a completely fatigued state, which for people who work on their feet, that is your sport. When you're on your feet 8 to 10 hours a day, fatigue is setting in. It's a more unpredictable environment because you're not paying attention to what your foot's doing. So we train in the gym in the controlled environment so that we can start to become more automatic with that in the uncontrolled and fatigued environment. And I think that's, you know, how my brain processes it a little bit. We've been talking more about the flat foot, and slightly because I'm selfish, I have very high arched, rigid feet. I struggled with that growing up. I was always getting foot pains and arch pains. So I feel like we should just give love to the other people out there who have high arches, myself included. I started kind of on this more natural foot health progression 4 years ago, now we'll say. I don't feel like when I look at my feet or when I try to even not force myself into pronation, but go into controlled pronation and stuff, I honestly don't feel like that has improved significantly. But the way my foot feels has definitely improved. And the way that it absorbs the shock that my rigid feet used to not be able to absorb well is definitely different. I don't know if you can speak to that, where I've been doing some of these things, the sensory, the awareness bits, all the pillars to some degree, probably not every day, so I need to get on it a little bit more. But can you speak to why I can now go run 2 to 3 miles in barefoot shoes, where 4 years ago that would have laid me up in a hospital?
Yeah. So for all the high arches out there that were like, don't forget about me, I'm a high arch too, so I'm with you. So the most important thing, I think, with foot type, but this is really particular to higher arches, is that foot shape, the visual looking at the foot shape, is not going to have an equal predictor of function, meaning that you're not going to see this huge change to be like, now I'm going to achieve peak function of my foot and movement and awareness and fascial connections and foot support and all of that, because small changes in the foot actually make huge impact in the body. And this is just the uniqueness of the human foot. Is I will tell people, if you get a 1 degree change, 1 degree, mind you, the naked eye cannot see anything less than 5 degrees. So 1 degree will make a big impact on your function. So you don't need to see it to know that it's happening. And that's really Dr. Dom example will be like, yes, he feels it, he's feeling it, but he doesn't see it. Okay.
So my arch might never lay flat on the floor, you're saying.
That's totally fine.
But so walking in the sand feels so good because my arch actually feels something.
Right? So for getting unlocking of the foot, and to unlock the foot isn't a arch that is then touching the floor.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
That doesn't mean that your foot has unlocked. The foot, the midfoot actually moves. It's called a mitered hinge, which is going to be confusing and hard to show without having any sort of video, but it's like twisting a rag, right? Your forefoot and your rear foot twist in opposite directions in a sense, which allows the foot to absorb energy. That you're not going to see through how high is your arch and how much is it now dropping. Okay. So that's an important function of a high arch that I think people might not understand. The Blackboard, which is a product that is out there, is a board that essentially creates that torquing mechanism in the foot, and it works really well for higher arches. So for anyone that is feeling very rigid, very tripod, is kind of what I think, you're like just stuck, very stiff on your tripod, don't really take impact well. The foot is a little bit tighter in the ankles. You will jam the bones, the midfoot together, and can get quote unquote top of foot pain. A lot of these things that you have probably experienced. And then just bringing a increased awareness allows you to just move softer in your movement as well. So you're waking up the nerves. You don't strike your heel as hard. You're moving more fascially versus stiff. So continue doing what you're doing. And for the listeners, is you don't have to see an actual change, a visible change in your foot, to know that you are unlocking it, that you are waking up these nerves. One question that I do get a lot as it relates to higher arches is they say, well, flat feet are unstable, unlocked, and need strength and stability. Short foot, foot to core, all the exercises, right? Like strengthen, strengthen, strengthen. So then they're like, over here, this higher arch foot that is up, rigid, stiff, they don't need to strengthen their feet, right? Because they're like too stiff, too strong. And I'm like, it's actually very different. When I talk about strengthening the foot, it's really around like toe flexor strength, the timing at which your toes engage. It's your deep muscles connecting to your pelvic floor. just because you have a high arch that is quote unquote stiff does not mean that those muscles are talking to the pelvic floor or that the toes are engaging. So yes, big takeaway, high arches still need to strengthen their feet, but it's not for the purpose of building an arch, because that's not how I actually look at foot exercises. Is not around, I am trying to build an arch and that's why I do foot exercises. It's, I'm trying to get your toes strong so you can balance. I'm trying to get your feet and your pelvic floor to stabilize so that your hip can transfer into a single leg stance. You can jump high, you can accelerate. So it's in a different way than I think this literal association of foot strength is for arch.
Yeah. Stiff does not equal strong.
Yeah.
100%.
And I totally agree with that. I completely used my bony structure to, you know, create that artificial stability. I actually tore the Lisfranc ligament in one of my feet playing basketball because of that miter joint twisted 1 degree too far. And so, yeah.
I mean, I think this is huge and crucial for people to understand, because that is what most people want. You know, they want the structure of what it's supposed to look like. So I'm going to do exercises to improve my arch because my arch is supposed to look a certain way. And so I'm only doing, you know, pulling in a towel because that is going to pull in my arch, you know, instead of really understanding the function of how it all works together and the coordination, like you were saying, and how that relates to the entire body and the inner core. So how can someone, you know, listening to this start to say, okay, wow, what are some exercises then that I can just start with that might start waking up the fascial lining from my foot up into my core? Or are there specific things that you recommend? Is it just using more like your kinesio board and starting to bring awareness to balance? Obviously the stimulation from all of the tools that you guys have, because you have the stimulation on everything, you know, obviously that's going to help to build that awareness, but where do I go and what exercises can someone start with just in that strengthening and connection process?
Yeah, great question. So the exercises that I recommend are really based around short foot. Short foot is kind of like a doming. And we just said, don't talk about the arch. Well, now I'm talking about it. But the action is not just in the arch. So this is really important. It's not just an arch building exercise for quote unquote short foot, right? But that's really everything is based around. I am not a fan of doing like toe yoga, or there's one where you can tap your big toe out to the inside. It's a toe abduction tap. But it's really based around compliancy. I want people to actually do something. And then looking at research. And there's a lot of newer research articles that are out there within the last couple of years that are comparing a lot of these exercises and saying which one has the highest EMG, like muscle activation, which means which of these exercises has the highest ROI to what we're trying to achieve, which is intrinsic strengthening or small muscle strengthening. So I really, everything is built around that. So my exercises are not overly exciting. Sometimes we think that the variation of exercises creates the greatest excitement. I'm just a realist and I look at the research and I know people are not going to be doing that many anyway. So let's just hit it on the head. Okay. So what we want to do is first one is a forward lean. Forward lean is one of my favorite exercises. This is kind of pretending like a ski jumper, but it's not that extreme, or like Michael Jackson, not that extreme either, but we're more like a tree blowing in the wind. So you would stand with your feet shoulder width apart. You would want to set your base. And this is very important. If you have a falling arch, over pronated flat feet, high arch on the other side, but pronation are the one that are going to have to correct their feet a little bit more. You want to make sure that you are rotating your hips, finding your tripod, spreading your toes, and you're setting your base. So I have videos on just like, this is literally how you set your base before any foot exercise or any balance exercise. Boom. Okay. Feet are shoulder width apart. Arms are by your side. You're imagining that you are stiff as a board. Stay stiff as a board. You're going to slightly lean your body forward, like the ski jumper kind of analogy. And as you lean forward, your toes are going to reflexively push into the ground. What's happening is every time you lean forward, you activate a postural reflex in your nervous system. We do not want to fall over. That is a postural reflex. So your toes will engage. And essentially, you go back to a vertical position. So you lean forward, go vertical, lean forward, go vertical. Every time you lean forward, your toes are going to push into the ground. The toes pushing into the ground is short foot. Short foot is pushing your toes into the ground. So it's a way that you could play with it a little bit more to create variety, or it could be a good way to teach foot activation to someone who has low foot awareness. I'm not even talking about the foot. I'm actually giving you a different cue. Now, real quick on that one is I will give that to older patients, meaning that they're a fall risk. They might have MS or Parkinson's or something. So they're older. And what I tell them is all I want you to do is pretend that you are a tree in the wind and you're just swaying forward. Don't sway back, but just sway back to vertical, right? And you're just swaying. All we're doing is these subtle sways. And I want them to feel what happens when there's just a subtle shift in your center of mass and how that activates the system. Then can you do the foot, the toe activation without doing the lean? So that's me taking the reaction and consciously contracting my toes. Okay. Now, every time I do that, as my toes push down, can I exhale? As I exhale, I'm going to lift the base of my pelvic floor. So I'm lifting there. Okay, great. Now, can I do that on one foot? And can I stand on one foot and hold that with the toe engagement? And I'm exhaling for 8 to 10 seconds on one foot. So now I'm doing a balance exercise. Okay. And then we do it on the other side. Okay. Now, can we do it on the kinesis board, which is a micro wobble board? Can I stand on there, toes down, exhale the whole thing? Do you see how I'm just,
yeah.
All I'm doing is adding little layers to the exact same cue that occurred from the forward lean. Right. And I build that off so that it's very transferable or progressive for someone to see, okay, I understand now that the most important action that we can pull into our foot is toe flexion. And that toe flexion builds the arch. Some people want the arch, builds the arch. But it also is how we balance. It's how you push off and take a step. So when I am about to take a step and I go into a lever, so if the listeners did a calf raise and you look at your foot, that's a lever position. When you're in a lever about to take a step, you have to have strong toes pushing down. And this is Newton's third law, I believe, where there's an opposite action to every, right? So you have to have a downward force as you go forward, right? So this opposite action. And if we didn't have our toes pushing down into the ground, we would have no strength. We would have no energy release. So it's really important. So I'm totally obsessed with the toes right now. I love the arch too, but it's all about the toes and building off of those few exercises that I just demonstrated.
That was huge. That was so impactful.
And just such a great way to wrap it all into a couple exercises, one exercise even, that somebody can just start to do to build that tripod, build some foot awareness, get into those toes a little bit. Like you said, stack the arch of the foot, the pelvic floor, the respiratory diaphragm, help start and tie that all in. And I love bringing in the breath, because anytime we consciously do that automatic thing that our body normally does called breathing, it helps connect us into those other cues and helps it become more automatic the more and more we do it. And then the more we add the variation of the one foot and the kinesis board and everything that you just brought up. And I think toe flexion strength is getting the shout out that it has so desperately needed for so long, especially in the high-end performance realm. I had a buddy who was playing in the NFL, and he was talking to me. He's like, it's so funny how obsessed they are with toe flexion strength right now, because it is that last few percent that a top-end athlete, if you have weak toe flexors, that's going to lower your speed. That's going to lower your vertical. That's going to lower everything, because it's the last thing that is, you know, propelling you off the floor. So I personally think that's an amazing place to kind of wrap up and leave people with an exercise or two that they can just take out and start to introduce. Start giving a little attention to these four pillars that are going to help into the future build that optimal foot health.
So yeah, that longevity, that's key.
Dr. Emily, thanks so much for taking the time to come back on. Can you tell us a little bit about where people can go to learn more from you and to maybe get their hands on some of these amazing Neboso products that we have been mentioning?
Yeah, 100%. So on Instagram, my Instagram handle is The Functional Foot Doc. I have a lot of content on there. Neboso's Instagram is Neboso_technology. I will spell Neboso for the listeners. NABOSO. So Neboso_technology. Perfect. That's the Instagram. My website, if anyone is curious as far as how I practice and see patients, is just my name. So dremilysplickle.com. And that'll take you to my practice. I see a majority of my patients virtually. So that's great for people all around the world. And then for Neboso is NABOSO.com. So Neboso.com. And then you guys have a fun discount. So people, listeners, can take advantage of that.
Yes. And of course, we'll have that all linked up below so that you guys can easily access any of the links that she talked about. Thank you again so, so much for educating the way that you do, making it practical, making it understandable, and giving the tools that people need to really help longevity of their entire health, not just their foot health. So thank you, Dr. Emily.
You are so welcome. I hope everyone got at least one takeaway.
Yeah. Another great episode with Dr. Emily. If you missed the first one, that was episode 183 that talked more about the biomechanics, meaning plantar fasciitis and bunions. So if you want to listen to that one, another great one. But this is why we love the Neboso products, because it goes beyond just the biomechanical aspects of the foot and into the sensory aspects, the aspects that are going to really help our foot and our whole body health long term. So if you want to check out any of that, we're going to have it linked up below to check out any of the Neboso, but don't forget to use code OPTIMAL because that gets you that 15% discount on any of their products site-wide. So check that out in our show notes below.